There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Live sport, the latest headlines and top debate. This is The Grill, live from Barasti on DubaiEye 103.8.
Just going 5 past 5 on your Saturday evening. A big thank you, as always, for your company with us this afternoon. We are into the final hour of The Grill, live from Barasti, where I've got to say it is a beautiful day down here. The sun is out. Everyone packed in to watch the early kickoff in the English Premier League. It is Liverpool against Manchester United. We're into the final 10 minutes of that one. Adam Bridge standing by. We're going to be talking to him ahead of our 6 p.m. featured match on DubaiEye 103.8. It is Crystal Palace against Chelsea. Before we do that, though, Dale Gordon, you've got the deets on Liverpool against United. It's still Liverpool pushing.
Still Liverpool pushing. I think Jurgen Klopp has realised that, and in his last card, he's played his last card. He's actually brought off Coutinho, actually, which is a bit of a surprise, Chris, to be fair, because I felt that Coutinho's had an excellent game today. But maybe, you know, on his travels as well from international duty, feeling a little bit fatigued as well. So Sturridge is on, and also Chamberlain as well. It's interesting as well, Daniel Sturridge, because if he scores, it's his 100th goal for Liverpool as well. So it could happen. But typical Mourinho as well, into the last 10 minutes. You never know. They haven't really had a sniff this half. You know, it's all been Liverpool, and they do deserve 3 points. But, you know, football is a funny game, shall I say. And I think that Manchester United might get a slight chance at the end now, which you'll be delighted being a United supporter. But Liverpool on the offence again with a free kick just outside the United box. Still 0-0.
We will let you know if anything comes of that free kick. But as I said a little earlier, our featured match from 6 p.m. this evening, it is Crystal Palace against Chelsea. And I'm delighted to say the man that will be calling that is a good friend of the show, a man that you will hear regularly from on a Saturday afternoon. It is Adam Bridge. He is on commentary duty this afternoon, and he joins us from the UK. A very good afternoon to you, Adam.
Yeah, afternoon, guys.
Let us start, if we can. I tell you what, let's start with team news this afternoon. I think the team news has dropped in the past 5 minutes or so. Crystal Palace against Chelsea. Palace winless, Palace goalless, for goodness sake, over the course of the opening weeks of the season. Team news today, interesting. Have they gone attacking against the champions?
Well, not really. I mean, Zahari's back. I mean, I was going to say they are pointless, they're winless, they're fairly hopeless as well at times, you would probably say. But Wilfried Zahari's back, which I think is what Roy Hodgson has been banking on, really. How fit he is a different matter, but he gets a start, and it looks like he's going to be leading the line for Palace today, almost as a kind of false number nine, with Andros Townsend and then Jeffrey Schlupp either side of him. Jason Puncheon is the player at is out. He's gone down to the bench today, obviously, and Benteke still absent through injury. So Milivojevic, Kabaye and MacArthur will provide a midfield three, and then the back line is fairly as expected with Ward, Dan, Sacco and Van Aanholt. And goalkeeper-wise, of course, Spironi is in the side today with Hennessy not available. So Zahari's back for Palace. That's the big news for them. As for Chelsea, Batshuayi gets his start up top in the filling the boots, of course, of Morata, who's injured. Willian and Hazard are providing the support up top for him. We've also seen a recall for Victor Moses, right wing back, and David Luiz returns, of course, from suspension in the heart of that defence. So it's back to Azpilicueta, Luiz and Cahill at the back for Chelsea today. But otherwise, as you were, with Fabregas and Bakayoko providing the strength in midfield. Of course, Drinkwater still out injured. They're also missing Kante, who of course has picked up an injury while on international duty.
I want to just touch on Chelsea. We'll come to Palace in a second if we can, Adam, but let's just start with Chelsea. Defeat on the opening weekend to Burnley. At that point there was a lot of naysayers, a lot of talk that Conte wasn't happy given the transfer business or the lack thereof of certainly some of the players that he had identified in the summer. But they've kind of quietly turned it all around. We saw that fantastic win against Atletico Madrid, didn't we? One of the best results for an English team in Europe in recent years. And you get the feeling and get the sense now that Chelsea could give this title a good real run this season again?
Well, they've taken as many points in the opening seven games as they had at this stage last season, and generally for defending champions, I think it was only City who did better in the opening seven games back in 2013-2014. So, yes, after a poor start, and defeat, of course, last time out to City. They do seem to have just added a little something and turned themselves around. The bit that got me, actually, was the fact that Conte just seemed a little bit negative in that game against Manchester City. I think he was negative from the out. You know, last season they were very much on the front foot. Moses, as an attacking option at right wing back, was always what he went for. And yet against City, he went for Aspilicueta, which immediately, for me, put them on the back foot. And then obviously when Morata went off injured, that substitution of not bringing on Batshuayi but bringing on Willian again said to me that he was concerned. He didn't have the sort of faith and belief in his side that he had last season. That said, they could be about to win six consecutive away games, because away from Stamford Bridge, they've been pretty fantastic so far this season. So they're better. I don't think they're as good as Man City. I don't think they're as good as Manchester United. But you would feel they'll make a pretty good fist of defending their title, but I can't see them challenging City or United.
And what about Crystal Palace? Roy Hodgson, a bit of a, well, it was a surprising one for me, in the sense that, you know, he'd ended his tenure at England. He was hardly Mr. Charismatic, was Roy Hodgson. Is he the man to pull Crystal Palace out of this mire, or do you feel that Crystal Palace are destined for the relegation drop this season?
I wouldn't say they're destined. You know, of all the teams that have lost this many games without scoring at the start of the season, most of them actually ended up surviving, quite bizarrely, invariably because they made a change in management. So if anyone can pull them round, it's going to be Hodgson. I think his hands have been tied by the players he's had available. To go into a season with just Christian Benteke as your recognised striker was obviously not Hodgson's fault. It wasn't Hodgson's problem. It was what he inherited. But it's not a solution that Palace can deal with, and obviously won't be able to rectify until January. So Zahar is really, really crucial for them. I mean, there are so many records that could tumble today if they lose and don't score. I've got a list of about 15, so much so that I think Norris McWhirter or Roy Carson, was he still here, would be popping round to have a look at him, fill up the Guinness book after this, because there are so many that they could break today if they fail to score. It feels like they're in a fairly hapless position, and I think the way you logically start to look at it is say, okay, what, you've got 31 games left. You have got to try and get probably 36, 37 points from those remaining 31 games. Is that achievable? Is that something you can do? And I think that's the question that Roy Hodgson will be asking himself, and he'll also be putting to the players. To me, I don't think it's going to be achievable.
You see them getting anything from today's match?
No, but then I've been wrong before, as you know. Quite frequently, in fact.
Yes. I was going to say...
It's all about confidence, and it's going to be about the first goal of the game. And the issue they've had, of course, is they're not keeping clean. I mean, if you take a look at their last 12 games, I mean, here's their goal score in their last 12 games. 0-0, 0, 4, 0-0, 0-0, 0, and it just goes on. They scored 4 against Hull. That was their last clean sheet and the last time they scored a goal. Can they turn that around against the Chelsea side? Not if Chelsea score first, no. So I think that'll be the key to the game. And I mean, we could see the batsman filling his boots up top today, I think, with a 2 or 3-0 victory for Chelsea.
Well, that is our feature match from 6 p.m. Before we let you go and get prepped, it sounds like you're already prepped, in fairness, Adam, for that game at 6 p.m. over here in the UAE. I just want to ask you very quickly, I know you're obviously over there, you're an Englishman as well, I want to get your thoughts on England's qualification for next summer's World Cup. I know a lot of articles have been written this past week about a little bit of an apathy towards Gareth Southgate's team. It's not been celebrated as previous qualifications have been celebrated. Gareth Southgate, your thoughts, fan of him, think he is the right man, and what are your hopes for next summer's World Cup?
As a person, I'm an absolute fan of him. I dealt with him when he was Aston Villa's captain. I've dealt with him subsequently when he's been managing Middlesbrough, and he's been a real pleasure to deal with, and he's a proper gent, and he loves his football. I understand what he's saying when he talks about how his hands are tied and that he has probably got 70 players at a push that he has to choose from, compared to previous managers who've had maybe 110, 120 or 130. But when you have to kind of deal with the hand, in essence, that you're dealt, which he is he making the best of it? And is he doing everything that he could do to bring the very best out of that team? And for me, the answer to that is a definite no. And that's the issue, isn't it? The football is poor. The quality of the way they're going about it is poor. What we're seeing with some of the younger England groups that he's worked with previously, what we're seeing from them is we're seeing a real step up in the quality of football they're playing. It's not coming through to this England side. And, you know, if we get to the last 16, we'll have done very well come Russia next year. So is he the man for the job? I think he's got the right ideas, but for me, he works on a higher level. He works at trying to distill this style of football down throughout the England age groups, and actually you're probably bringing somebody else, maybe an Eddie Howe, someone like that, who can coach them on a day-to-day basis and have an impact on how they go around playing football.
Very interesting, Adam. Always appreciate your thoughts on all the subjects that we throw at you. Looking forward to hearing your dulcet tones as well from 6 p.m. It is Crystal Palace against Chelsea. For now, Adam Bridge, thank you very much for your time.
Cheers, guys.
And that is the voice of Adam Bridge. He will be your commentator for that match. Dale, want to just pick up on some of the comments there. In fact, let's start with England. You're a proud Englishman as well. Gareth Southgate, interesting what Adam's saying there, that he is, in many respects, he's a suit. He is an FA choice, isn't he? He ticks all of the boxes from an FA point of view. Has he been hard done by? Is the stick that he is receiving, is it fair, given the fact that he has done all that's been asked of him and he's got England back to another World Cup finals?
Well, that's all you can do, Chris, is to qualify for the World Cup. And I think that England have done that at a canter. And let's be honest, you know, they've done it with the Euros as well. And when they went to the European Championships, they failed miserably. Roy Hodgson obviously took the stick then, and Sam Allardyce came in. They thought that he was, and I thought it was a good appointment personally. And we know exactly what happened to Sam. Very, very short stay as England manager, and Gareth had been thrown in there. His success he had at under 21 level was there to be seen. He was excellent. You know, great record. Like he's mentioned there as well, that they are trying to install the same method throughout the age groups. So maybe this generation at the moment, I think we're well short, possibly to go on and like he's mentioned, probably to get past the last 16. But he's a good manager, Gareth. But is an England manager? I'm not so sure. I think we need something more of a bigger personality for it.
Just listening to the comments there on England football and the national team, Chris. Interesting to compare them to your interview with Graham Henry last night when talking about building a team culture with everything in the pyramid, the stepping stones, the pathways being built to a successful national team with New Zealand, with the All Blacks, and the national sport of the country. Everything's focused on age group level at schoolboys to your lower provincial levels to your super rugby teams to your national team. It's all geared about having a successful national team. You contrast that against what happens in England with the football versus the Premier League and players seemingly who, I think England players have come out and said they don't like playing for England. They find the pressure unbearable. They don't like the team environment. You contrast and compare those two scenarios and you get what you get. You get the All Blacks, who are a dominant team in world sport at win at 90%. You've got England, who fail to turn up at World Cups, and players act as though they don't really want to be there anyway.
Well, we're just watching. Sorry, I want to just dive in there. We've just seen the last chance of the game. It has finished. Full-time whistle has just blown at Anfield. A little bit of a drab encounter, fair to say. I just spoke to one guy off air before the last break, and he looked at me and asked, did you expect anything different from a Jose Mourinho game and team? And you're probably right. A 0-0 game it is. A 0-0 result it is. Sorry, Liverpool 0, Manchester United 0. United probably the far happier of the two teams. It keeps their unbeaten start to the season on track. When we come back, we'll have reaction to that. We'll also continue that conversation as well, because there were some illuminating things that Sir Graham Henry said in that interview on Thursday. We'll maybe talk about some of those as well. Keep your thoughts coming in on 4001, and we'll join us when we come back.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
Yeah, the game is always on down here at Barasti. Sun is just starting to set on this beautiful Saturday evening. If you are just joining us, full-time whistle has just blown at Anfield. Not much to report, in all honesty, because it finished Liverpool 0, Manchester United 0. We'll allow Dale to collect his thoughts. We'll get his kind of conclusive findings? Wrong word to use. Conclusive thoughts on that one in a few moments' time. But I want to just return to rugby. There's an early kick-off over in Leinster. It is the European Champions Cup. Leinster taking on Montpellier. Mark Archer's got the deets.
Yeah, 52 minutes gone in the first of today's five Champions Cup matches. It's the European Club Championship. Round one is taking place this weekend at Dublin. In Dublin, Leinster, the home team, are taking on the French side, Montpellier, and they lead after 52 minutes, 19 points to 7. Three tries, one to Carberry, Van der Flyer, and Robbie Henshaw for Leinster, and Nemanja Nadolo has scored for Montpellier. So it's the first of five matches today. Matches coming up later this afternoon, Sandy Park to Exeter at home to Glasgow. Racing 92 will take on Leicester Tigers in Paris. At the Recreation Ground, Bath will play Benetton, the Italian side. And the late kickoff is at the Stoop in southwest London, where Harlequins will entertain La Rochelle.
Yeah, what have you made of the start of the Aviva Premiership season, Arch? Because we spoke to Dylan Hartley a week or so ago, and the Saints, beaten handsomely in their opening week, then came good. I think they won 5 on the bounce from an Aviva Premiership standpoint. Very competitive, that league. I had a look at the table earlier this week, and my goodness, everyone's beating everyone in that.
Yeah, it is competitive, and it's always interesting to see what happens after a Lions tour when players have to be sort of eased back into the club sides. Some players taking longer after having really not an off-season at all, with particularly the players. Some clubs like Saracens massively affected. You know, the likes of Farrell and Atoje and a number of other players who are away with the Lions come back and just don't have a pre-season, so they can't get rid of the niggles. They don't have the time to rest and recover, and they're thrown into a Premiership campaign, back into matches for England coming up with the Autumn Internationals. It's tough for them to do, but, you know, it is incredibly tough. You've got teams like Exeter, who don't lose so many players away to the national teams, always strong, tough place to go, Sandy Park. You've got the form of, as you say, Northampton have come back into it. Saracens are always going to be there or thereabouts. Harlequins have started the season a bit better than past. It's a very, very competitive Aviva Premiership.
It certainly is. Keep your thoughts coming in on 4001. I want to return as well between now and 6 o'clock to some comments that a lot of you have been texting in regarding the changes in the ICC cricket, what they're looking to try and do, the creation of a Test Championship and a one-day international league. But Dale's been furiously scribbling down his thoughts on that match that we witnessed a little earlier, Liverpool against Manchester United, a drab encounter. You were expecting a little bit more from that game, weren't you, Dale?
Yeah, most definitely. We think we built it up too much, Chris, didn't we, at the start, you know, about the two.
Well, you did.
But, you know, look, it's one of those ones as well. You always look at sometimes how many yellow cards are given out in a match like this, because we know there's no love lost between these two sides. And we know, obviously, with Mourinho and also as well Klopp, I don't think they're the best of friends also. So I think there's a slight glimpse there as well, as Jurgen Klopp came off the pitch saying to Lovren that there was only one team wanted to win it. And yeah, I think he was probably 100% right. It would be interesting to see what his post-match interview will be like, because I think that he would be disappointed. He'd be pleased with
frustrated.
But he'd be pleased the way the players had, you know, adapted. Obviously, they lost Mane, which is a massive, massive, you know, gap in their formation, the way they've been starting and the way he started the season as well, Chris. But you know, from a United point of view, Mourinho will probably be delighted with the point. I think it's always a difficult place to go to after international break when you have such a big game. If you look at all the other fixtures around the Premier League over the weekend, you know, it's the so-called top sides have got a generous opposition, and that's no disrespect to the opposition that they're playing against. But for me, we mentioned at the top of the show that it was a test for me as well to see if Manchester United against the Liverpool, like Manchester City went to Chelsea and were able to nick a 1-0 win there at the Bridge. It lays a marker down, if you like, and I think that Mourinho will be disappointed with his players today, because they did start well. The first sort of like 20 minutes, they looked quite comfortable on the ball going forward, forced the first two early corner kicks in the first 2-3 minutes as well, and you thought, oh, look at the Mourinho's not going to shut up shop, he's going to go for it. But as the game panned out, really, Klopp's, you know, the three boys up front caused United problems just with their movement. Flaminio was excellent on the day. Coutinho came off with sort of 15 minutes to go, put a good shift in, but unfortunately were unable to break the United defence down. Matip had the outstanding chance, which De Gea saved with his feet. Salah should have scored on the follow-up. In the second half as well, Emre Can found himself between Jones and Smalling right inside the 6-yard box. An unbelievable chance for him at the cop end as well, and he's blasted it over the bar. So overall, it's a 0-0 and only one yellow card, so probably reflects on the game itself.
It's an interesting statistic just came up after the match about how much the players from both teams had to travel from the international breaks. Liverpool's players travelled 70,000 kilometres, Manchester United players travelled 65,000 kilometres. That match, in retrospect now, it looks as though both teams were tired.
Yeah.
There was not a lot of dynamism. There wasn't a lot of out-and-out chances. There were a couple of chances on each team. Both goalkeepers had pretty comfortable days. A couple of good saves by De Gea.
Yeah.
Man United maybe had two chances in the match.
Yeah.
Two shots on goal.
Yeah.
And apart from that, it just didn't have any... No. Didn't have any. The players looked as though they were jet-lagged. They played as though they looked as though And as we said before the match, Jose Mourinho has maintained a seven-point gap between Manchester United and Liverpool. Manchester United will probably be second after this weekend. We were thinking City were probably going to get the result at home to Stoke. And he'll come away being pretty happy. He's missing Fellaini, he's missing Pogba. And all in all, as part of the campaign goes for the whole season, yes, it's a result they haven't got against Liverpool, but he's going to be pretty happy after the weekend. And I think I'm looking forward to seeing Klopp's post-match interview, because I think he's a bit like, well, we're the only team trying to win it. Well, you didn't win it, mate. It was 0-0.
Yeah,
you got to do better. You've got to do better.
But also, as well, Arch, I mentioned about, you know, after the international break, that it's a top game, isn't it? You know, it's one of the biggest games in English football, as we mentioned as well. But I look at the Manchester City game now with Stoke going to, you know, to the Etihad. I think it's going to be. It might have the adverse effect as well, that sides then the likes of the Arsenal, difficult game against Watford. You know, Man City, a difficult game against Stoke. You know what, have the physicality of a Mark Hughes team as well there. I think that overall, you know, they may well look on the back of this after the weekend and think a point
you
is always, actually a good result.
You always want a home game after an international break, no question about that. Just an interesting stat that has popped up as well. And this one, this is quite galling for Manchester United and certainly for Jose Mourinho fans. You look at the five games last season away from home against your Liverpool, Chelsea, Man City, Arsenal and Spurs, your top six. Essentially, Manchester United last season, 0-0 at Anfield, got beat 4-0 by Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, 0-0 at the Etihad with Manchester City, lost 2-0 to Arsenal, lost 2-1 to Spurs. Another 0-0 today. Jose Mourinho has yet to beat any of those top six sides on the road. That tells its own story. Couple that with the fact that he's actually now only scored one goal, or his team has only scored one goal in six away games against fellow top six sides. That does not make for good reading. So it's important that we stick to the facts that, yes, OK, Manchester United have had an unbeaten start to this season. Yes, OK, in some of those games, the Swansea's, the Everton, they're scoring four goals. But for when anyone that perhaps will tell you that they're back to the free-scoring days and the free-flowing days of old of Manchester United, those stats suggest that that is not the case.
No, absolutely. And I think the start they had as well, Chris, that, you know, we mentioned that Lukaku as well is firing on all cylinders, and his start in a Man United shirt has been excellent. But it's the opposition who they've been up against as well. You expected them to get the results that they did. Yes, you're 100% right. Away, the away form and scoring away from, you know, against the top, say, five or six teams is not there. It's not there to be seen. Like, on the flip side of it, the other half of Manchester, shall we say, the noisy neighbours, are going about their business, you know, and they're gonna wait to the bridge and nicking the 1-0s. And I just think, collectively as a squad, Manchester City mentioned there a little bit early on about that they started last season on fire, really. You know, Man City, you know, I think they won the first seven games, but you know, it's for me, it's like Guardiola, like, understanding the responsibilities now, his job at Manchester City, and learning from last year and bringing the right recruitment in. I still think that Manchester United are possibly short of maybe a two or three players.
Interesting comments that from Dale Gordon. Just gone at 5:30. When we come back, we are heading off to the UK. We're heading to the high seas. We're catching up with Mark Archer's good mucker, Ian Walker. Stay tuned.
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
The game is always on. We're 27 minutes away from our featured match on Dubai 103.8. It is Crystal Palace against Chelsea. That is then followed by our late game from Vicarage Road this evening, 8:30 kickoff. That is Watford against Arsenal. I'm looking to see who West Ham play this weekend. They're up at Turf Moor. They're taking on Burnley this afternoon. The reason I mention West Ham, well, it will all become clear very, very shortly, because our next guest, Mark Archer, a good friend of ours, someone who we've seen regularly in this part of the world and who, I've got to be honest, I quite miss.
Yeah, we do miss him this part of the world, don't we? A good friend of the show and, of course, the skipper, the previous skipper of Abu Dhabi Ocean Racing, who won the last version of the Volvo Ocean Race. Now, the Volvo Ocean Race gets underway in the next couple of days. I think it might be tomorrow, may even be today. They might have a import race, yep, etc. But the skipper, a good friend of the show, Ian Walker, joins us live from the UK. Good afternoon, Ian.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody.
Yeah, great to hear your voice, Ian. It has been a while since we last caught up with you, and it's been such a while that we've got to start, not by talking sailing. Let's talk West Ham. You've been seeing much of the Hammers of late?
I've not been up to the stadium this year, but obviously been following them closely. It's a bit of a nasty season already. But, you know, I think they seem to be improving slightly. We started the season with three away games. with some difficult ones as well. Man U, I think we opened the season, so obviously that's hard on confidence. And, you know, they're picking up a few points now, a few players back from injury, so it's an important game today to show that actually they can be a good team this year.
Ian, we want to talk about the start of this year's and this and next year's Volvo Ocean Race, but of course, you've had a long association with the race for pretty much a decade, racing yourself in the race, and of course, a massively successful campaign last time around for Abu Dhabi Ocean Racing with the victory. Before we talk Volvo Ocean Race, just want to talk about your new role in sailing. You're the Director of Racing at the Royal Yachting Association. Just tell us about that role, what you're up to now, and obviously your thoughts looking back as the Volvo Ocean Race gets underway.
Well, I'll be honest, it feels pretty strange being sat in England with the Volvo Ocean Race about to start in Alicante. In fact, I spoke to our old team manager and my good friend Jamie Bogue. He's there, so I had to phone him this morning just to get a bit of gossip, just to get the lowdown. So it feels very strange indeed, but it's for a good reason. As you say, I've started this new role, and I mean, my principal job is as performance director for sailing, so, you know, with all the national lottery money invested in sport in the UK to deliver medals at the Olympics, it's my job to make sure that happens in sailing. And, of course, sailing's been one of the most successful Olympic sports for Britain over the years. I guess for people who don't know anything about sailing on the national lottery, think of David Brailsford, if you like, 10 years ago. You know, that was his role at British Cycling to deliver medals, and that's what I'm charged with doing now.
And Ian, you talk there about the Volvo Ocean Race and the fact that it is a bit strange that you are on dry land and not preparing for the race around the world. Just talk to us again. It's always a fascinating listening when talking to you just about your experiences on the high seas around the globe, racing against fellow sailors and some of the best sailors in the world. What will you miss most about it?
Oh, well, I can tell you what I won't miss. I won't miss the long, dark, windy nights. I won't miss the freeze-dried food. I won't miss wearing the same clothes for weeks on end because we're trying to save weight by not taking, you know, extra food or extra clothing. What will I miss? I think I'll miss the camaraderie. I miss the teamwork. The fact that you share that incredible experience. For those of your listeners that aren't familiar with it, the Volvo Ocean Race is a fully crewed, i.e. 9 people on a boat sailing around the world in stages. And obviously, you go through a lot of heartaches and high points and low points, and you share that with every one of your teammates. So, you know, I'll miss the team. The last race with Abu Dhabi Ocean Racing was so, so successful. I think we were on the podium in the first 7 legs, obviously won the race outright. And so, you know, I'll miss coming into the finishing line in first position and everybody cheering on your team. And I think that's more than anything, that's what I'll miss. If there's a sporting thing that I'll miss, I think it's just the fact that you get to sail your boat for days on end. And when the weather's good, if it's windy and warm, and you can just sail for miles and miles on end. Unlike any other sailing race, you know, there's no bottom mark. You've got to stop and go back upwind. You just keep on going. And you can't replace, as a sailor, everybody I think who really loves sailing wants to sail in the Southern Ocean and wants to experience the big winds and the big waves. You just don't want to be there for too long.
Ian, we've talked a bit about earlier in the show about innovation in sport. We're talking about some of the new rules and the new championships that the ICC have named this week. I know you're a cricket fan. They're talking about this new Test Championship to give relevance to Test cricket as a whole. They're talking about trialling 4-day test matches, one day leagues. One of the sports that has been forced to innovate really is sailing, whether it be the America's Cup, which we've seen some amazing developments in recent years with the different regattas. And the Volvo Ocean Race has also been forced to innovate and develop and try and become more user-friendly, more fan-friendly. Just talk us about some of the changes with this edition of the Volvo Ocean Race and how the sport is trying to reinvent itself to become more popular, more mainstream.
Yeah, it's a really interesting time to be, you know, to be a sports fan. I think a lot of sports are really struggling with their identity. And, you know, rugby we've seen has got, you know, so professional and so physical that now, you know, that it risks undermining the whole sport through injuries. You know, cricket, the same thing. The success of T20 is sort of threatening the very essence of the sport in Test cricket. And sailing is similar. You know, we've got the advent of really fast boats and very professional, super fit crew, which is fantastic, apart from the fact it's so far divorced from your average sailor who goes out in his boat at the weekend, you know, in their club anywhere around the world. So I think a lot of sports are struggling with that. And, you know, in many ways, football is, although it has, you know, choices to make about, I don't know, video refereeing or things like that, fundamentally it's still, you know, 11 aside and a ball and a pitch and two goals. And that hasn't really changed. And, you know, I think these sports that are trying to reinvent themselves to be more popular and to move with the modern times, it's very difficult. If you don't do anything, you get left behind. If you change too much, you lose your core following. But, yeah, in sailing, it's, you know, the Volvo Ocean Race, the biggest thing they've had to address is the cost. The problem with sailing is that, like Formula One, you can really spend any amount of money on preparing your boat, on design, technology, on the crew, and then the budgets just become unattainable, and then the participation goes down. And we see that even at Olympic level. The problem now in sailing at Olympic level is it's absolutely full-time, and therefore you know, most people can't afford to do it without a lot of backing from the likes of UK Sport in the case of Great Britain. So, you know, very interesting times and a lot of dilemmas, really, and I think a lot of the governing bodies of many of these sports are struggling, and there's a lot of vested in.
Yeah, Ian, what do you make of the new route for this Volvo Ocean Race 2017-18? 11 legs across 12 cities in 6 continents. I'm seeing Melbourne added to the cities, the stop-offs, Guangzhou over in China as well. What do you make of it, and what is it the truest test for any sailor in the world?
It is definitely one of the toughest tests in terms of, you know, a team of sailors. You know, the America's Cup is tough, but it's predominantly design-led, and it's all over in an hour or so. You know, this is 24 hours a day. It's weeks on end. And as you say, the stopovers have changed principally because Abu Dhabi are not involved this time. So whereas the race, you know, diverted up to the Middle East and then sort of fiddled its way through past Singapore into the China Sea, without Abu Dhabi having a team and a stopover, the race goes back to its traditional route, which is more around the Southern Oceans. Which a lot of people, you know, whilst they're sad to see the race not going to new territories like Abu Dhabi, you know, a lot of the traditionalists like the idea of the race being back down in the Southern Ocean. So, yes, stopping now in Australia, if you like, instead of the Middle East. The only thing, of course, with the race being owned and run by Volvo, which is now Chinese-owned and managed, and the race still diverts all the way back up to China. So that's going to feel pretty strange, getting to Australia and turning left all the way back up to Hong Kong and Guangzhou before coming all the way back down again into the Southern Ocean.
Ian, I know you were out in Bermuda earlier this year when Emirates Team New Zealand regained or won again the America's Cup. I want to get your thoughts on the innovation that they've done in the America's Cup and, of course, the new protocol named recently by Grant Dalton and Emirates Team New Zealand to go back to monohulls, to go back to some different formats, nationality rules. Just your thoughts on America's Cup and the direction that that sport is heading in, or that format of sailing is heading in as well.
Well, for the listeners who haven't followed the America's Cup, having been a very traditional deed of gift challenging event between countries, or between yacht clubs, in fact, and in traditionally big yachts with big teams of people, the last edition was in foiling catamarans, and you know, completely contrary to anything traditional at all within the sport. And I freely went on record as being very conflicted as to whether this was a good or a bad thing. I went to Bermuda with my eyes wide open, and I have to say I had a great time. The boats were spectacular. The racing was innovative. It was quick. It was physical, and it still remained quite tactical. So I actually quite enjoyed it. My biggest problem with it is, again, it's just so far removed from what you do as a 10 or 11 year old learning to sail in your yacht club. And I think it failed to capture new audiences, and it did lose the interest of some of the traditional audience. So New Zealand, they were the ultimate traditionalists. They won the cup, and they basically, one of the things about the America's Cup is if you win the cup, you get to write the rules. So they're going to take it all the way back to where it was in terms of sailing a monohull boat with probably 10 or 12 people, and a lot more of the traditional values put back in the cup. But I think there will still be a very keen interest in having a fast, modern boat. So personally, I think I'm delighted that the Kiwis won it. It's not often you hear me say that, Mark. But it really was them against the world. They did an incredible job. The other five teams pretty much ganged up against them, but they still managed to carry the trophy back to Auckland.
And Ian, we started this conversation with talking about your new role. Let us end it there if we can as well. How enthused are you with British sailing? I mean, you've talked about it as well. It's been hugely successful in the last decade or so. We've had a rich history, haven't we, of sailing over in the UK. Just, is it still on a good footing? And I guess, what more can we expect in the coming years?
Well, the short answer is yes, we are in a good shape. We've got two current world champions in the Olympic classes. We finished second in two other classes. We've also got some gold medalists who took a year off after Rio to return, Joel Scott, Hannah Mills being two of them. So we have some very strong sailors. For me, it's really exciting to be working at that level again. The Olympic sailing is really the purest test of sailing. And, you know, even this week, in my first week in my new role, you know, I've got to sit with some of these athletes, you know, listen to them talking about their strengths and weaknesses, and I can tell you it's very motivational for me to be back really at the coalface with these very dedicated athletes. And of course, one of the things in British sport right now is there's huge expectation after such a tremendous performance in Rio, and of course a lot of investment from UK sport, and we have a very tough medal target. And as we saw after Rio, sports that don't deliver on their medal target, they will lose a lot of funding in the future, and that will mean the loss of coaching jobs, the loss of support staff, sports science, and that will affect the performance. So we've got a tremendous responsibility to try and uphold what it has been thus far, an incredible record in the sport. So no pressure at all for me.
No pressure at all. I've got no doubt you will do a fantastic job. Everything that you've touched has turned to gold in the past, Ian. I've got no doubt in my mind it will be the same with British sailing. Always a pleasure. And just lastly, before we let you go, you mentioned as well that you're a bit gutted that you're not involved in the Volvo Ocean Race, given the fact, of course, you won it last time out. Just you think tonight, Ian, you're going to be clambering into a nice comfy bed. Those boys won't have that very soon.
Well, that's right. I'll be able to watch it on the internet and point out all the mistakes they're making. But look, we're in for a great race. A lot of my old friends are involved still. So if people want to watch it, you can follow it online. It's a great app, and there'll be a lot of excitement. I can guarantee that.
Great stuff. Ian Walker, always a pleasure. Thank you very much for your time, my friend. And we look forward to speaking to you again very soon.
All right. Cheers, guys. Nice to chat.
That is the voice of Ian Walker, skipper of Abu Dhabi Ocean Racing, the last time that they won it, Arch. And that was a proud moment, not only for Ian, but a proud moment for the UAE, because a lot of money was invested. It was a port as well, a whole city for when the Volvo Ocean Race came into town. They begun by having a vision of winning it, and they went and did it.
Yeah, and you got to put it into context, because they had a pretty disastrous race and a pretty disastrous race the previous edition in 2010, 2011. And Ian learnt from his mistakes. He put a great team together. They really followed the when they went to the one design boat, about the best team will win rather than the best boat. And he took on board. We talked, you know, that chat you had with Graham Henry yesterday about trying to get the team culture right, having no loose ends, you know, left in the terms of the team performance. They trained hard, they raced hard, they got the results, and really a wonderful win for the UAE team, Abu Dhabi Ocean Racing. And it's a shame in many regards that they're not part of this one. Let's not rule out Abu Dhabi and Abu Dhabi Ocean Racing coming again in the future, but it'd be interesting to watch how this race proceeds without a local interest.
It certainly will. When we come back, we're wrapping up the grill down here at Barasti. The place is absolutely teeming. If you are looking for somewhere to watch the football this evening, then do pop on down. We are located for the next 10 minutes at least on the top deck of the Barasti building. When we come back, we'll get to some of your texts. We'll also look ahead to some of the late kickoffs as well, not only in the Premier League but across Europe as well, because Bayern Munich, well, they've just kicked off 15 minutes or so ago. We'll give you a score update of that as well.
This is The Grill. Tweet the team at Dubai Eye Sport.
The final segment of this afternoon's show with myself, Chris McCarty, Dale Gordon as well, the former Rangers, Norwich and West Ham midfielder. We're also joined by just good all-round bloke, Mark Arch.
Former Bays United, Nelson United under 16.
is that what your professional...
That's my football career.
What, are you under 18s now, are you?
Well, that was about 30 years ago, Dale. But
it's
yeah,
the vets now, I think.
Bays United and Nelson United.
Listen,
there
I'm,
you go.
I'm walking football at the moment.
Listen, actually, just on that, Dale, a quick word. You've been a busy boy in the last couple of weeks. You were over in your old stomping ground of Norwich City. Mm-hmm. They've released a book about you, or you're in a book, or there's something.
Good press, bad press. No, I had the pleasure to go back to Norwich City for 4 or 5 days, and took part in a new book launch. It's called Tales of the City 3. It's about Mick Dennis, who is he works for the Daily Express in the UK, has come up with this idea. And it's just looking back at players' careers at that particular football club. I know they've done the same book at Watford as well. And you know, I'm in volume 3.
You've got a mention.
I'll get a little mention. I've done a little chapter in there. I've got a book for you as well, Chris.
Oh, nice.
Well, yeah, I've got a little present for you. So
beautiful.
Straight
on eBay later.
Yeah, and also as well, it was nice. It was about 200 people. It was at the football club, and it's just a Q&A with another gentleman called Chris Gorham, who works for the local radio station there, Radio Norfolk. And I was on the show with Simon Lappin, who recently just recently retired. Also, as well, Terry Alcock, who looks amazing for 160, and also as well my ex manager Ken Brown, who basically gave me my debut against one of the teams we've been watching today, Liverpool. And it was quite ironic that Kenny Dalglish had a newsstand named after him, and I played against Kenny Dalglish on my debut, and he was just incredible. He was that one, and he just rolled a defender. I think he rolled Steve Bruce. We just signed Steve Bruce from Gillingham, and Steve Bruce unfortunately scored an own goal as well on his debut as well, and Kenny Dalglish curled it to make it 2-0. But a lovely, lovely stay back home in the football club, and linking up as well, Chris, that obviously with my academy over here, which is DG Pro FC, we're going from strength to strength, and taking my under-12s back to the UK at Easter for a 9-day tour. And a part of that tour is obviously to play against Norwich City, nice, under-12s, and also the local rivals, Ipswich Town as well. But effectively then, I've been coaching, I've had the group now for about 4 years, and we'll take them through now until they get to a scholarship age in the UK of sort of like, you know, 16. And just, you know, looking at their progress, and hopefully nice, one or two of them will be given the opportunity to join Norwich City on a professional basis.
That is fantastic. It just goes to show it's not what you know, Dale, it's who you know. Great, fantastic connections there at Norwich City. Congratulations
Thank
on
you.
The chapter of that book as well, and a massive congratulations, Norwich affiliated as well with DG Pro FC. More on that, I'm sure, in the coming days as well. Monday Night Football from 7 on Monday. I'm conscious of time. We're going to wrap up very, very shortly. But Arch, very quickly on all things rugby. The early kickoff in the European Champions Cup. It was Leinster against Montpellier. Full-time result?
It's almost all over in the dying minutes of this match, and it's Leinster at home taking on Montpellier. It looks like they're going to sneak the win. They're 24 points to 17 up. 4 tries for Leinster. Carberry, Van der Flyer, Henshaw and Daly, and 2 tries for Montpellier by the big Fijian winger Namali Nandolo. So it looks like Leinster are going to win this match at home, 24 points to 17, full time, almost up on the clock. Four matches later this afternoon to look forward to, and of course Ulster kicked off their campaign last night with that 19-9 victory over Wasps.
Indeed, let us just give you some score updates very quickly from the Bundesliga. Bayern Munich in action, their first match under Jupp Heynckes. I say their first match under Jupp Heynckes. It's Heynckes' start of his fourth stint as Bayern Munich boss. Carlo Ancelotti sacked before the international break. I can tell you, 24 minutes on the clock at the Allianz Arena. It's Bayern Munich 1, Freiburg 0. It was an own goal from Julian Schuster. Elsewhere in Germany, Hannover 0, Eintracht Frankfurt 1, Hertha Berlin Schalke. No goals in that one, neither in the Hoffenheim Augsburg. And I can tell you, it's Mainz 1, Hamburg 1. One full-time result to bring you from La Liga a little earlier today as well. It finished Athletic Bilbao 1, Sevilla 0. And that's a good victory for Bilbao. It was a very hotly contested affair. You mentioned earlier, Dale, there's one booking in Manchester United, Liverpool. There was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. There's 11 bookings in that match between Bilbao and Sevilla. But it was Bilbao who took the victory. Mikel Vesga is the man who got that winning goal. So that's you bang up to date with what is going on the continent. Just some team news as well to give you ahead of the 6 p.m. kickoffs in the Premier League. Sergio Aguero, despite suffering a broken rib a few weeks back over in Amsterdam, he is fit enough to make the bench for City today. Gabriel Jesus will lead the line there. Raheem Sterling and Leroy Sané providing the attacking thrust down the wings for City. They're taking on a Stoke side who, it's got to be said, and away from home against the big teams so often struggle. They have unsurprisingly named a formation which sees Heze lead the line. Jesse, that is, lead the line on his own. He'll be ably assisted by Jerdan Shaqiri and Eric Maxim Choupo-Moting. So that is team news from that one. Spurs against Bournemouth, that one also getting underway, 6 p.m. The man on form, Harry Kane, not scored in the league at Wembley, their home ground this season, Dale, but on the road he can do no wrong.
He can do no wrong with playing for England as well, Chris, can he? And no, it'll be, like we said, a test of character as well with the players, because they've come back from international duty. Difficult game again for Spurs, but again, like you mentioned, you know, they're so strong away from home. It's just their home form at Wembley, and it could be a hindrance to them.
Dale Gordon, always a pleasure catching up with you, my friend.
Thank you very much for your company this afternoon. Thank you.
Mark Archer, thank you very much to you.
Thank you, Chris. Just some breaking news coming actually in from Abu Dhabi. If you'd like to be part of a batting masterclass with the Pakistani legend Yunus Khan, just go on to Abu Dhabi Cricket Facebook. He's going to be down here for the T20s doing a couple of private masterclasses. If you want to be part of that, just go onto the Facebook for Abu Dhabi Cricket, get yourself down to the Abu Dhabi to the Zayed Cricket Stadium and get involved with Yunus Khan.
Sounds awesome. And just very quickly as well, Roger Federer took the second set against Juan Martín Del Potro, 6-3. That was after he lost the first set, 6-3. I can tell you he's just broken the Argentine as well in the deciding third set. He leads at 4-3 on the serve of the Swiss maestro. That is it from us down here at Barasti. You've been listening to The Grill for the past 3 hours. We thank you as always for your company. Up next, do make sure to keep it locked on Dubai 103.8, because it's our featured match from the English Premier League. It's Crystal Palace against Chelsea, and then do make sure to tune in from 8:30, Watford against Arsenal. From all of us down here at The Grill at Barasti, have yourselves a lovely evening. Good night.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.